Does Hillary Clinton's defeat in New Hampshire signal the end to neoliberal policies and the establishment? Also, where to invade next? Michael Moore's new documentary really calls on America to be great again. All that and more coming up. And welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for February 11, 2016. I'm Esther Averam. Well, today we'll be unpacking this political moment, the presidential election, a Democratic socialist winning a presidential primary, and this collision between neoliberal and neoconservative politics of the last 40 years, and a call for a political revolution. This is our first week of the Winter Fund Drive, and I'm asking you, yes, you listening right now, if you can become a new or renewing member of the station. And to do so now during our show, to support On the Ground's coverage of activists and activism on the streets and in the suites of power here in the nation's capital and the DMV. Our goal is only $600, just a pittance. We know we can do that. And you can get me started by calling 202-588-9739 or pledge right online at wpfwfm.org. I want to thank all of you for helping this show meet and exceed its goals for all of last year. All the money goes to the station. This is a labor of love. You know, me and Chantel, we've been freezing in the bitter cold in Annapolis on Martin Luther King holiday to bring you voices of Black Lives Matter activists demanding justice out on the National Mall at the crack of dawn last year to bring you voices of climate activists during the Pope's visit, or on Pennsylvania Avenue last May for the historic march of the descendants of Black Civil War veterans, only here on Thursdays at 11 a.m., maybe 2 weeks ago outside Union Temple, 2 weeks ago as residents from our area right here in the DMV spoke to representatives of the United Nations who have recommended reparations for centuries of oppression of African Americans. So I'm counting on at least five new or renewing sustaining members pledging at least $10 a month to support your Jazz and Justice station. I have a couple of special thank you gifts for the first five callers for each of these things. For $65 passes, so you and your date can go out and see Michael Moore's new documentary, Where to Invade Next. It's opening here in the DMV this weekend. And also for $65, a copy of Knocking the Hustle Against the Neoliberal Turn in Black Politics by Lester Spence, who will be visiting with me in the second half of the show. Of course, you can take home both of these special gifts if you become a sustaining member at least $10 a month. Finally, if you or your organization would like to co-produce and co-host a show with me, a $250 donation can make that happen. So as always, we have a lot for you in this less than an hour, starting with our headlines. And before I do, I want to thank Anonymous, who called in from Baltimore. Baltimore is in the house. Thank you so much, Baltimore, for renewing your membership to WPFW Jazz and Justice Radio. Now, our headlines. Activists in Maryland that have worked to restore voting rights to the formerly incarcerated scored a victory this week when the Maryland General Assembly overrode Governor Larry Hogan's veto and passed legislation to extend voting rights to felons before they complete probation and parole. One formerly incarcerated activist told a crowd in downtown Baltimore last summer that voting is a right of citizenship.
Sometimes you learn when you're incarcerated. Sometimes you come out a whole different person. You come out knowing the right thing to do, and besides that, parole stipulates that you work and pay taxes. If I'm paying taxes, that means I'm a citizen of this city and state. If I'm a citizen of this city and state, guess what that means? As a citizen, I deserve the right to vote.
More than 40,000 recently released Maryland felons will regain the right to vote in 30 days in time for this year's primary and general elections. The rights of undocumented workers was the subject yesterday morning at a Stop the Raids panel and breakfast on U Street in Washington, D.C. Those directly impacted, youth, families spoke, as well as legal and community experts. The dialogue explored the struggles and dangers families face in Central America and uplifted the causes to seek refuge in the U.S. It also highlighted the inhumane practices here in the U.S. in detaining families and children. One organizer connected the issue of immigration to global struggles.
I think it is absolutely crucial, you know, to link this particular issue that we are seeing with at least four larger issues that bound us all together. I mean, one is the growing pattern of economic inequality in the world. I mean, we are absolutely leaders, you know, in that particular trend, but it is a global trend. You know, the 0.01% is accumulating most of the wealth that gets to be generated. And that's a shame, and that's directly linked to everything we are talking about. Second, the question of race, and more specifically, white supremacy and racism in the U.S. in particular, but it also has expressions, you know, outside the U.S. that I think we must link with. The third issue is the precise prejudice against foreigners, xenophobia. I mean, that we also need to bring very consciously into the equation. And the last piece, which is very complicated and definitely not for this morning to be talked about, because we won't have the time, is the brokenness of democracy as we have known it. You know, the pattern of people being mostly disengaged, you know, with what is supposed to be democracy is not only happening in the U.S., it is also happening throughout the world, and certainly in Latin America. And we need to ask ourselves, especially young people, what do we need to do to renew the practical, meaningful meaning, I'm being redundant, of democracy?
A proposal to shut down the controversial homeless shelter at the former D.C. General Hospital and locate neighborhood-based emergency housing development in each of the district's eight wards will be unveiled tonight in meetings in all eight wards. Tonight at 6:30 p.m., Mayor Muriel Bowser and her staff will host the meetings to discuss the plan, which includes six locations for short-term family housing, one location for apartment-style family housing, and one location to serve as housing for single women only. Each of the short-term housing facilities will accommodate up to 50 families with secure private rooms, places for children's studies and activities, comprehensive social services, and 24-hour on-site management and security. Activists at the Washington Interfaith Network and its 50-plus institutions are strong supporters of the plan to open smaller shelters around the city to replace D.C. General and is launching its Yes in My Backyard YIMBY campaign today in conjunction with the mayor's rollout. You can get more information about tonight's meetings by calling the mayor's office at 202-727-2643. The link for the plan, which includes pictures of the proposed sites, is at dc.gov/homewarddc, HOMEWARDDC. Also tonight, Pan-African Community Action is hosting an education session exploring the potential for community control of local resources such as land, water, and jobs. From California to D.C., people across the country are experiencing water shortages, contamination, and surging utility prices. For example, Walmart, one of the nation's major job providers, announced recently the closure of 269 stores this year and won't build any stores east of the river in D.C. as stipulated in their agreement with the city. And globally, there is a mass selling off of life-giving and sustaining land. What is a resilience strategy? Let's find out. That's sponsored by the Pan-African Community Action tonight, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Petworth Library, 4200 Kansas Avenue in Northwest D.C. And in other Black Lives Matter news, the Department of Justice is filing a lawsuit against the city of Ferguson for its failure to implement the agreement to address systemic discrimination and violation of the constitutional rights of African American residents. The city of Cleveland has actually billed the family of Tamir Rice $500 for the ambulance ride to the hospital after he was shot and killed by police. Governor Rick Snyder was a no-show at a hearing about the Flint water crisis on Capitol Hill yesterday. And finally, this week marks 1 year since Natasha McKenna, who was mentally ill, died after being tased 4 times while she was naked by 4 Fairfax County Sheriff deputies. On Monday, Black Lives Matter DMV joined with other activists in a demonstration outside the Fairfax County Adult Detention Center where McKenna was held in custody and where she was fatally injured. There have been no charges filed, no indictments, and no one fired in her death. After the announcement of no charges, Black Lives Matter activist Erica Totten spoke out at a public hearing last September.
This casual killing act of 1705 from this state is specifically showing up in this case for Natasha McKenna. And it reads, and if any slave resist his master or owner or other person by his or her order, her, sheriff, correcting such slave and such correction, it shall not be accounted felony. It shall not be accounted felony.
I'm going to ask once again that you hold your comments for the public forum.
Because we can't wait for justice. My name is Asantwar Nkrumah Ture. But tonight, my name is Natasha McKenna.
The Fairfax County Sheriff's Department has announced changes at the detention center designed to treat rather than incarcerate those who are mentally ill, but there have been no arrest charges, indictments, or firings in McKenna's death. And those are headlines and happenings. When we come back, we'll speak to Lester Spence, and we'll also talk about where to invade next. Stay with us.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi, catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. Sauce in my bag, squad. I see it, I want it. I stunt the yellow, want it. I dream it, I work hard. I grind till I own it. I twirl on my middle. Albino alligator. A Reno with a Zeno. Sipping Cuervo and no pizza. I'm a go-off, I'm go-off. I'm a star, I'm a star.
And welcome back to Thursday's Community Watching Comment. That was Beyonce's new hit Formation here on the ground.
That's right.
And so, Katia, we began to discuss earlier in the show, and we're going to be talking to Lester Spence soon. Mm-hmm. You know, this New Hampshire primary was considered historic for so many reasons. You know, we have the first person, a declared socialist, democratic socialist, yes, winning a primary in this country. And yet we have this strange situation with the delegates happening. He won an overwhelming majority, but he only got like half the delegates split. What is happening?
That is our door.
Oh, okay.
Someone's holding our door open right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
As long as they're
not
holding us up.
No, no.
There's nothing to take.
Right.
But I'm really in tune to this conversation that Etan had earlier about the Michelle Alexander piece in The mm-hmm. Nation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I said, right on, you know,
right.
Like what is this with this? Am I so out of tune in my little like leftist bubble that I don't understand how like black folks in South Carolina are going to rush in droves to the polls to support Hillary Clinton? And the other thing is,
well, you know, we have a history, whether, you know, I know, you know, but many of our listeners might not be aware or may be aware, but there is a history of not only black people voting against their own interests, but poor and working class people of all persuasions voting against their interests because, as I think Davy D said, Hillary Clinton, very persuasive, very charismatic. She will have you thinking that all those things her husband did were wrong, first of all, you know, she won't call him out, but she'll make you think that all of a sudden now she's turned the corner. Mm. And, you know, that's the danger. And, because also I think most of us, and that is all people, most people want to believe the good in people, even with politicians. Right. They want to believe that the good things they say are really those, the true things. We get into this place. And so that is why Michelle Alexander's article is so very important and so very illuminating.
Well, we also have some things in addition to our brilliant discussion here, just in time for this election. We're offering mm-hmm. two thank you gifts this morning. The first is Where to Invade Next. 5 passes, and each pass will admit 2 people.
Wonderful.
You and your boo, right? Mm-hmm.
Your bae. Excuse me. Boo is old. Bae.
Bae? Oh, bae. Right. I'm sorry. I have to keep up with my nieces and nephews.
There you go.
Facebook.
Yeah, Johanna informs me.
New movie. His new movie is Where to Invade Next. It's opening here in the DMV this weekend. And these passes are for the run of the engagement at the East Street Cinema Monday through Thursday, so you can hit it on President's Day when you're off. You know, so this is his new documentary, and I saw it. It's his comedy where he kind of he pretends to invade all these other countries to see all the things that they do really well for their people that we don't do here, you know. And it was one scene where he takes the American flag and he's going to plant it in the living room of this Italian couple, and you know it's so sad because he had just heard this couple tell them how they have like 8 or 9 weeks of vacation plus a month of paid holiday or something, and he says what? You know? So anyway, It's really, I mean, I think our audience would really enjoy it. So for a pledge of only $65, they can get this.
That's fantastic.
And also for another $65, we also have the new book by Lester K. Spence and mm-hmm. Knocking the Hustle. Really insightful book against the neoliberal turn in black politics. And it's fortuitous for us today that we have Lester Spence to talk to right after this win, because when we talk about neoliberal politics and neoconservative yes. politics, they're really the same, right?
Right.
Except
right.
the neocons,
right.
they don't try to sugarcoat it in any
right.
way, right?
Right.
And really, I'm really excited to talk to him about what this win in New Hampshire means and whether the Democratic establishment with this, you know, entrenched neoliberal agenda through Clinton, you know, through President Obama, right? That maybe they're just out of touch and they think they got it, but they don't, you know?
Yeah. So, well, we're hoping that's the case. We're hoping that's the case. And I want to say that, you know, we were laughing on the break because we were both listening to Beyonce and I have to say grooving to the new Formation single. But we were saying that, you know, social justice people, we can have fun too. So I think those movie passes are wonderful. You'll learn something and you'll be politicized.
Right.
You know?
So 202-588-9739.
That's right.
202-588-9739.
Or
WPFWFM.org. So we want to hear the phones ringing.
We absolutely do. And we have a modest goal, $600.
Yeah, yeah. And we know some folks, they promised me they were going to play. So I know that I have some people calling, but I want you to call too. Silver Spring, Bethesda, Potomac.
Tacoma
Bowie,
Park.
Yes, College Park.
Glen Arden. They're already in the house. They can be in the house again.
And right here in D.C., Northwest,
right.
Southwest, Southeast.
Northeast.
And Virginia.
That's right.
Arlington. I have
Fairfax,
a lot of calls from Arlington.
Herndon.
So I want to hear from Arlington and Herndon. And, you know, people hear us all the way down in Woodridge. They love,
as in,
like, Andrea Bray has this big, like fan base.
Right.
In, like, Woodridge. So, you know, so be my fan, too.
Right.
Yeah, be a fan for social justice.
Well, and you know, Davey D made a good point, and then I'll let you move on, Esther. But I think that as an investigative journalist, you know this, that the right, they invest in those media outlets. They need to further their story, further their agenda.
Right.
This is the people's way of investing in a media outlet that furthers our story, furthers
exactly.
our agenda.
Listen, let me tell you. We have to hook up with this Act Blue.
Yes.
Let me tell you. I don't know, you know, management, you
right.
know? Because, I mean, Bernie Sanders raised almost $7 million mm-hmm. right after the New Hampshire primary. And so far, he's raised like $38 million, all from individual donations,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, we are witnessing a people-powered campaign, a
Absolutely.
People-powered political movement.
Yes.
And we want to be your people-powered people's media. Okay.
That's right.
So we don't have like all the fancy apparatus hooked up like we should, and we should.
Right.
But since we don't, you call 202-588-9739, 202-588-9739, or go online to WPFWFM.org.
And we want to say thank you to renewing member Terry out of Waldorf, Maryland. So
thank you, Terry. Thank you, Terry. Give me a T.
800-222-9739. Right. I thought it was give me a B. No, I'm just playing.
No. Okay. I was going to actually spell it out, but right. That's an Esther.
No, B for Beyonce.
Calm down. Right. All right. Okay. So, you know, as we were just discussing, the Sanders victory included a wide range of demographics. And so we want to explore this, and we're going to explore it with Lester Spence. He is the associate professor of political science and Africana studies at Johns Hopkins University. He specializes in the study of black racial and urban politics in the wake of the neoliberal turn. He's an award-winning scholar. In 2013, he received the W.E.B. Du Bois Distinguished Book Award for his book Stare in the Darkness: The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics. And also, he was awarded as a teacher. In 2009, he received an Excellence in Teaching Award. He can regularly be heard on NPR and the Mark Steiner Show. But this morning, he's on the ground on Pacifica. Good morning, Lester.
Hey, that's how you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm cold chilling.
Cold chilling. Okay, so are we. We're cold chilling right here in D.C. I didn't like those springtime temperatures at Christmas time, but I could sure use a little warmth right now. So, to start, what is your reaction to the presidential race so far? And specifically, do you have any thoughts about the New Hampshire and Iowa caucuses?
Yeah, I think that we're really at a dangerous moment politically in American history, and most of the mainstream media, and in fact, a lot of the progressive media, isn't fully articulating kind of the danger of this moment. What we have in the Republican Party is a party that's becoming more and more radical, more and more extreme, and we can be pretty sure that whoever comes out of their primary is going to represent the what would have been maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, the fringe element of the right. And the Democratic Party, we have a challenge, but it also represents a tremendous opportunity in that we have somebody in Bernie Sanders who, on the one hand, has absolutely no foreign policy experience and actually no desire to even really talk about foreign policy, really. But on the other hand, he represents the closest thing he represents democratic socialism. I mean, he really does. He doesn't fake the funk. I mean, he's been kind of making an argument for left public policy along domestic issues for the past 20, 25 years. And with him winning and handily in New Hampshire amongst every demographic except voters making more than 200,000, what we have is the potential of a presidential race where we have, on the one hand, kind of the fringe right kind of going heads up against the progressive left. And we haven't seen an election like that in my lifetime. And I'm not sure, I'm not sure how far we'd have to go back, to actually find an example of this.
So I haven't heard much in the corporate media about kind of linking this discontent that the voters are showing to a rejection of neoliberalism and also neoconservatism. Of the Clinton, Obama, and even the Bush administrations. And so I know that's what your book is about in terms of neoliberalism. Can you talk to us about, I guess we should just start with neoliberalism as a definition and what it's wrought in the last 30 to 40 years and if you see the voters rejecting that?
So the way I define neoliberalism is, simplest definition is just the idea that every aspect of human society and all of its institutions should be kind of governed by the logic of the market, right? And we can see a turn towards these policies in the early 70s, in Chile first, and then in Great Britain, and then the United States through the Reagan era, and then it really comes to pass during Clinton's era, or during Bill Clinton's presidency. The effects it has are pretty disastrous. We know that countries that implement neoliberal policies are simultaneously hit by significant levels of economic inequality. And we know that countries that have, that implement neoliberal policies, what they had, if they had anything approximating a welfare state, that is a set of policies that are designed to take care of or provide kind of protection for poor citizens, we know that they, and every place those policies, neoliberal policies have been implemented, those policies have been, those welfare policies have been kind of eviscerated. And then finally, there's this, as it relates to black populations, that I'd make two arguments. On one hand, what we can see is everywhere that neoliberal policies are implemented, we see a ratcheting up, in policing. We see significant increases in police spending. And then finally, as far as responses to neoliberalism, what we've seen, and this is what the book is basically about, what we've seen is that rather than contest the neoliberal turn consistently, we see a range of black actors, black political actors, black activists in some ways, and a range of black institutions, actually reproduce the neoliberal turn for, and as it stands, it's really, neoliberalism is really disastrous for black people. But when you actually have black institutions reproduce that, that makes it even difficult, even harder for black people to contest it.
You know, I saw two posts online that I liked. One was on the OccupyWallStreet.org website. It said that neoliberalism is neoconservatism without a smirk. And they were talking about Obama's smile instead of George Bush's smirk. Mm-hmm. And also, there was a post by two people, Elizabeth Martinez and Arnaldo Garcia of the National Network for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. And they said that both policies advocate, one, rule of the market, two, cutting public expenditure for social services like education and healthcare, reducing the safety net for the poor, like you mentioned, deregulation, privatization, and eliminating the concept of the public good or community. I thought those were really concise and really interesting ways of looking at what we've seen in the last 30 years. I wanted to play a clip from Bernie Sanders doing his acceptance speech after the New Hampshire win.
What the people here have said is that given the enormous crises facing our country, it is just too late for the same old establishment politics and establishment economics. The people want real change.
So I think everybody heard that nationally. It was a pretty long speech. But what do you think about the capacity for his policies to deliver that change, given the political climate? What do you think needs to be done for him to actually implement that change, given the Congress we have, given the Supreme Court we have? Or are we hoping to change all those things if he goes into office?
So yeah, it's really, really important. And he can't really, he has to actually start articulating this. It's going to be impossible. Even whoever comes out of the whoever comes out of the Democratic primary is going to win the election. So if it's Hillary, Hillary's going to be our next president. If it's Bernie, Bernie's going to be our next president. The Republican Party, they just don't have the numbers. They just don't have the numbers on a national level. But with that said, whoever comes out of the Democratic primary, you know, that next president, it's going to be almost impossible for them to govern. It's going to be impossible for them to govern because I do not expect the Republican Party to stop their obstructionist tactics just because the black guy isn't in the White House anymore. So with somebody like Bernie, with both of them actually. Again, whether you're talking about the neoliberal or the democratic socialist, it's incumbent upon both of them to articulate a strategy by which we can transform each of the 50 states, because a majority of those 50 states actually have Republican state legislatures and Republican governors, and then to create kind of a national platform to retake Congress. You know, what we're talking about is the equivalent of an electoral political revolution. And that's something that that we have to articulate if we want anything close to Bernie Sanders. And that's something he has to articulate if he wants anything close to the policies he's articulating to actually become the law of the land. There's no way around it.
Right. And I'm looking at this whole situation. I mentioned to Katia earlier about the superdelegates.
Yes.
And also, before we go to the break, I wanted to get you to talk about that a little bit. And also, what's your take on this, I think assumption by the Clinton campaign that they have the black vote sewn up?
You want me to answer that now?
Yeah.
I think people are talking about the black. I don't think Hillary believes that. I don't think Hillary believes that she has the black vote sewn up at all.
Mm-hmm.
And as an aside, I love Michelle Alexander's article,
mm-hmm.
right? And I talk about the effect of those policies in my book. I talk about the effect of those Clintonian policies, the welfare policies, the crime policy. I talk about that, those trade agreements. But this is actually what I want to push back on. I want to push back on Michelle in two ways. And actually, the other sister who was just with you a second ago. Black people don't have the tendency of voting against their own interests.
Okay.
Other populations do. But black people actually have been pretty sophisticated in understanding where their interests are.
Right.
So it's not. So Michelle argues that black people have basically been flim-flammed in the voting for Clinton. They weren't flim-flammed. Well, and she used the term we, right? First of all, black people weren't flim-flammed. They made the best decision they could, given the information they had and the interests they had first. Second, it's important that we not talk about the black vote, but rather black voters, right? Even though a sizable percentage of black voters tend to vote Democratic, there is no one black vote, right? So thinking about that Clinton vote, there are a number of black people who voted for Clinton because they knew they would get paid, and they did, right? Black, mm-hmm. Black upper class folk, black people in the professions, whether they're professors or whatever, they saw their incomes increase significantly.
Mm-hmm.
So, when we're talking about black voter preferences, we have to be a lot more sophisticated, whether we're on the left, whether we're black or we're white, a lot more sophisticated than what we are.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Avarim, and I'm in conversation with Lester Spence, professor at Johns Hopkins and author of the new book, Knocking the Hustle, Against the Neoliberal Turn in Black Politics. And that book is available to you as a thank you gift today during our fundraiser. For a pledge of only $65, you can get a copy of Lester's book, which is really right on time, given the time that we're in right now. We also have passes to see Michael Moore's new film, Where to Invade Next. 202-588-9739. 202-588-9739, or go to WPFWFM.org to pledge. We're going to go to a brief break right now, and we'll be right back.
That scene out
back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground Edition. I'm Esther Averam, and I'm in conversation with Lester Spence, professor at Johns Hopkins and author of the new book, Knocking the Hustle, which is the opposite of what the song was saying, that you can't knock the hustle. And we're in our fundraiser, and I want to urge you again to call 202-588-9739. That's 202-588-9739. I want to thank Terry again, who pledged, and I want you to join Terry in pledging for On the Ground show that brings you voices of activists and activism here in the nation's capital and the DMV. Let me see. Where are we now? Now, the subtitle for your book is Knocking the Hustle Against the Neoliberal Turn in Black Politics. Tell me more about the things that you discuss in the book. I know that you mentioned the Clinton era and the ways that neoliberalism has impacted the black community.
So what I basically do in a kind of the like the forward of the book is actually personal. I actually talk about a series of kind of near tragic events that I dealt with economically in order to kind of talk about the type of precarity that black middle and upper class, upper income folk have to wrestle with.
Right.
And then to kind of juxtapose that against the type of precarity black people who are really like black folks who work, who might work at Walmart, for example,
right,
that they have to deal with, which are actually really far more significant in many ways than the stuff you and people like me have to deal with.
Right. And that's very important because there's during this whole same time, and I don't mean to jump in, but there's been an actual book about that called The Precariat. And,
yes.
And I suppose that you're relating that whole issue to neoliberalism and just the ways that our lives, our finances, our economies are precarious, and it gets more precarious the farther down the income scale you go.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And we're increasingly expected to bear all of the responsibility, you know, without getting anything, you know, there's no state support or with dwindling levels of state and extra institutional support, right? And the people who aren't able to kind of be resilient, they aren't able to kind of hustle, they're increasingly punished and increasingly expected to be punished, right? Like your ability to hustle basically determines whether you're treated like a human or whether you're basically discarded. So what I do is I kind of talk about how we got to this point, because it wasn't like this in 1965, 1966, 1967, something had to happen. So I use that first chapter to kind of talk about a little bit about economic theory, but in a way that, you know, folks who don't necessarily have economic degrees can understand. And then I talk about how those economic decisions, how those large scale shifts in the economy kind of translated into an embrace of neoliberal policy and neoliberal ideas. But because this book is about black policy, you know, and I talk about the racial dynamics of that, right? Mm-hmm. Because we don't see a turn towards neoliberalism without racial politics operating in a certain way, right? Without people kind of using black women, for example, to argue against welfare, without people using black men, for example, to argue for more punitive approaches to crime.
Right.
But because I'm interested in black politics, I move from that to talk about how this dynamic expresses itself within black communities, within the black church, within black churches, for example, with the growth of the prosperity gospel, within the decisions of black mayors like Philadelphia's Michael Nutter or Baltimore's Stephanie Rawlings Blake, how this affects black cities like New Orleans and Detroit, how this affects the rhetoric of somebody like Barack Obama. But because I'm not just interested in critiquing and showing how problematic this dynamic is for black politics, I'm also interested in kind of going through solutions. I conclude the book with three or four case studies of how people are organizing on the ground to kind of contest that turn and what contesting, you know, what real rich attempts to contest the neoliberal turn should look like.
Yeah, you know, I One of the things that I thought was so interesting about your book is the fact that it deals with this idea of kind of like personal hustling and personal branding. I think at some point in the, either in the book or the materials I read, you use the quote, or someone used the quote, you know, like, I'm a businessman, you know, as opposed to I'm a business, comma, man. You know what I mean?
Right.
Meaning that each person is supposed to like be a business and to brand themselves and to hustle, as you say. And it strikes me, number one, that this is very closely tied to the, I guess, the mythology of America and the mythology of capitalism, that, you know, we all can make it. Some people hearing what you just said will say, that's the problem. We shouldn't rely on the state. But the thing is, if you're supposed to make it and hustle and rely just on yourself, but it's on a rigged playing field, you know, then that's not really for real. You know, that's not a real contest. That's not a real challenge to you and your personal ability if you're on a rigged playing field. So that's one of the things I thought was really important in your book. And just talking about what neoliberalism is and how it's related to so much of the popular culture and popular entertainment and ways that we kind of look at the world. 202-588-9739 is the number to call to pledge in. We're in our winter fund drive, and I am about three quarters of the way through my show, and I think I have one pledge, but I know that I may have some more. Oh, there's Katia. I may have more, but I want you to call in and to make your contribution, become a new or renewing member here at WPFW, Listener Power at Jazz and Justice Radio in the nation's capital. 202-588-9739. Also, 1-800-222-9739. But you can also pledge online at WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. And I guess Katia will be back. She was here, then she left. But, I'm talking to Lester Spence, and we've spent a lot of time talking about the Democrats, but I know that you had some very strong feelings that you mentioned earlier about the Republican Party and how dangerous, you know, this is, this moment, this political moment is. I mean, we do a segment on this show called The F Word, where for about a year now we've been exploring fascism and pre-fascism in our society. And one of the things that we've done is just looked at the rise of Donald Trump, his rhetoric. Also, not just Trump, because he kind of gets a lot of the focus, but if you really listen carefully to Rubio and Cruz, all these people are very far right. And a lot of their policies and statements are beyond neoconservatism. They're extremely right wing. And I noticed that people like Chris Matthews on MSNBC, he's talks about socialism. He's been really dogging Bernie as much as he can, but he calls Donald Trump a nationalist. They won't really say fascist so much on that station. They won't really talk about it that much. Every now and then, the other Chris does, Chris Hayes, but not him. So I'm wondering about that. I want you to think about that for a little bit. And, Katia's back in the studio with me with
Hello.
An update from,
yes.
from Fundraiser Central.
Right, the front lines, as it were.
Yes.
No, you're on the front line here, right, actually.
Right. So,
we got folks to thank, Esther. We want to say thank you very much to Anthony in Orange, Virginia. Wow. There you called for Virginia. There it is.
Thank you, Anthony in Orange, Virginia.
Yep. We want to say thank you to John out of White Plains, a very generous pledge and a new member. You got a bell there? Uh-oh, no bell in here. Oh, there we go.
Oh,
thank you, very generous.
John,
thank you, John, so
and
much.
Thank you, White Plains. White yep. Plains is in the house.
Yep, absolutely.
Orange, Virginia's in the house.
So Virginia's representing. Oh, this is White Plains, Maryland.
White Plains, Maryland.
Yeah. Not the Plains, Virginia. That's what we're thinking. That's
right.
What I'm thinking. Washington, D.C., Northwest in the house. Anonymous, very close to our heart. Thank you so much. And for a very generous pledge as well.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, very generous. We want to say also thank you to Lee. Thank you so much for your very generous pledge of support. And that is a renewing member. So you can be in the house as they are by calling 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org, or 202-588-9739. And we have some more of those theater passes still to see Where Do We Invade Next?
Where to Invade Next.
Michael Moore's new
really
film.
Really funny movie.
East Street Cinema, Monday through Thursday. Monday's a holiday. Go check it out. And one pass admits two people. Yours for a pledge of $65. And, of course, Dr. Spence's new book, Knocking the Hustle.
Yes.
You can pick that up. A very riveting conversation. You can always hear it on our archives, which is wonderful. But right now, you can get the book to take with you to read and then go back and listen to the conversation and see what you think.
Exactly.
You know, you might have a different insight.
Exactly.
When you
exactly.
do that.
Yeah. 800-222-9739,
WPFWFM.org. We're on a roll, y'all. Come on. Invest in media that invests in you.
That's right. Invest in our struggle. Invest in our lives.
Exactly. Yes. And your own life.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you can join Terry, Anthony, John, Anonymous, and Lee this morning in supporting Jazz and Justice Programming. And for this show, Justice Programming, the ability to have our voices from the streets and in the suites of power brought into the studio, broadcast over 50,000 watts so that we can have our voices heard and the people in power can hear our voice and we can hear each other. Because it's so important to know that you're not the only one. You're not the only one who thinks that way. You're not the only one who feels the pain of what we're going through in this country for the last 30, 40 years, and before that. But when we talk about neoliberalism, there are a lot of people out here who they know exactly what we're talking about. It's this fine kind of gauzy type of oppression that you can't really put your hand on it all the time. It's not exactly someone shooting you down, but increasingly it is, right? So 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739 or pledge right online at WPFW.org. I have about 5 or 6 minutes left and then I have to turn over the reins to Krista Property. So help me make my goal. I'm not sure how far we are from it, but we do have some passes left and we have some books left, so please call 202-588-9739. Okay, Lester, so we took that call, that pause for the cause, so let's get back to our conversation. So I asked you to think about the ways that this moment is being characterized by media, and what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right on point, and the danger in just articulating Trump's policies or Trump's rhetoric as nationalist is that it just doesn't. It's accurate, right? It is empirically accurate in that he does events kind of American national or white nationalist ideas, but the thing is that it doesn't quite go far enough, right? It really, really doesn't go far enough.
And it kind of sounds attractive in a way. And it kind of sounds attractive in a way to a lot of people. Like, well, why shouldn't I be a nationalist? Why shouldn't I be? Because nationalist to a lot of people means that I'm supporting my country.
America first.
Right.
Right.
So it makes it sound attractive.
Yes. Mm. Yes. And what we're looking at. So what's the reason? Why we know the reason why folks are supporting Bernie Sanders over Hillary Clinton, right? But it's the same reason why people on the right are supporting people like Trump, because they believe that the politicians that they've elected consistently understate what's going on, and they feel inconsistently as if they can't make ends meet, as if every dollar that they make is being taken from them, in addition to like 2 more dollars being taken from them. They want to put their kids through school and they can't. They got health bills up the wazoo, and they're seeing on the right, they're seeing somebody like Trump. Trump is the one who tells them exactly the truth as it is. That's what they believe, right?
Right.
And we know that in their case, they're actually, the project that they're promoting is not just nationalist. It's not just bringing Americans together. It's about binding people together for a large scale political and economic project that will be absolutely disastrous for people on the bottom. And that will be disastrous for people worldwide. We know this.
You know, one last question I have, because I'm running out of time. But, you know, it strikes me that with capitalism kind of stretched to its limit around the globe and facing repeated crises, you know, do you think that the billionaire class is willing to accept democratic socialism if that means they can save some remnant of capitalism?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Well, we know they've done it before. Well, right. Not a billionaire class necessarily, but I mean, they did it. They came close to doing it in the 30s, right?
Right.
So I think it's very possible. I think it's possible. And it looks like that this is a question we'll actually be able to have an answer to, as opposed to something we just make. I mean, just think about this. If you would have told me while we were chilling at McConaughey's crib 10 years ago,
right,
that in 10 years time, we'd have a democratic socialist who's the front runner. In fact, a democratic socialist Jew. This is the first time somebody Jewish has ever won a primary. I mean, this is absolutely crazy, right? But it looks like we're
going to
see.
Crazy good. Crazy good. Yeah.
Yes, crazy good.
Right. So the, I guess that's going to have to do it for me, because I see that I've run out of time, but I want to do one more pitch and urge you to go to 202-588-9739, and pledge. Or also go to WPFW.org. We have passes to Where to Invade Next, Michael Moore's new documentary, and also this wonderful book, Knocking the Hustle Against the Neoliberal Turn in Black Politics, by my guest, Lester Spence. Thank you, Lester, for joining me this morning.
Oh, thank you, as always, us.
We'll have to talk again. I want to talk, you know, I have to talk to you about Flint. You're a Michigan.
Yes.
You're a Detroit man, and I have to talk to you about Flint, but we'll hook up again, okay?
I'm with that.
All right. So his new book is Knocking the Hustle Against the Neoliberal Turn in Black Politics. And I want to also thank our engineer, Mike Nasella, and our contributors today, Chantel James at the Stop the Raids Action, and Lydia Curtis on DC's new plan for the homeless. Also thanks to DJ Wahid and to Amy Alexander and Jamila Bay. So thank you for supporting your station for Jazz and Justice. You can keep helping us meet our goal today. Keep calling 202-588-9739 or go to WPFW.org to show your support for on-the-ground coverage of activists and activism here in the nation's capital. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can now listen to all of our shows and past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. We are looking for volunteers and interns who are interested in working in radio and digital media. Write us at contact@onthegroundshow.org. Now stay tuned for the news, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice out there. Thank you for calling. Peace. Thank you.